participant.
Even though the killer was reported to be worshipping a renowned deity of repute, what was actually in the idols he had at home was a very different entity.
Pongo Point was a popular location for bodies to disappear.
All these items that you use for protection, they come with an entity.
He was caught when the authorities searched his warehouse and discovered the bodies of his victims stored in wooden cabinets and trunks.
Is anyone here? What did you find?
You are listening to Supernatural Confessions.
Supernatural Confessions is a safe space for anyone who have had a paranormal encounter and want to be able to tell their story to a community who will not ridicule them. Some of us have experienced the unexplainable ourselves, while the rest of us simply enjoy listening to ghost stories. If you or someone you know have had an encounter to share, get in touch with us through our website, supernaturalconfessions.com.
Hi everyone, in our second last Friday night live show of the year, we bring you untold confessions from those working with inmates on death row. Due to the sensitive nature of their jobs, the identities of the confessors will be kept anonymous. Listen to stories of a gangster who just couldn't die, how the spirit of a serial killer might have returned as promised, and the blatant use of black magic to defeat the legal system. All these stories and more in Death Row, only on Supernatural Confessions. And now, introducing our host, the Prince of Paranormal, Eugene Tay, and the immortal Jonathan Lim. Only on Supernatural Confessions. Enjoy.
Hey, welcome back to Friday Night Live, ladies and gentlemen. We are your host. I'm the Prince of Paranormal, Eugene Tay, along with the very handsome bearded man beside me. That's my co-host. He is the immortal Jonathan Lim.
Hello. Hello, everybody.
Of course, okay. We cannot run this show without some very, very important people who have been there from as early as first time we start Patreon, and the list have only been growing. This has been very motivating for us, and it keeps us going, keeps us excited week after week to do a great show and make it better each time. And these are our champions.
Oh, new format.
You can see the format change because no space. And it's a good problem. So patreon.com/supernaturalconfessions, our top tier. These guys, sentient entities, Elaine Chua, Tunku Alsatian, Umiko Grimm, Zippy Matt, Queen Lai, Lim Tek Chuan, Elwin Sensei VL, Casey Chan, Alexa O, Janice Ang, Jacqueline N, Yong Kwan Yu, Han Jae, Ko Sisi, Jerwin, Dato Easy. Dato Easy was previously in Spirit. He upgrade. Wandering Spirit, we have Joel Goh, Deborah Confield, Jia Keng Toh, Linda Hayden, Elix, Jess Neo, Jerry Fish, Bibi Teo, Tak Hak Wee, Two Sands, Elvin Lim, Kenny Polaris, Jayanti Saritsu, TTB, Jujube Jume, HW Tay, Zippy, Divandes. And Wrestler Souls, we have Sichie Toh, Grace Chai, Kenny Chia, Ron K, Jack Ong, Nicholas Boa, Burke, Serin Tan, Rachel Y, Kevin C, and a new name this week, Lechmi.
Nice. Thank you all.
So if you want to expand my list and give me put your name in there, well, the place to go to is patreon.com/supernaturalconfessions. I hope you guys enjoy what I do behind the scenes, sending out patron only footage. But don't worry, all the best bits are on still the main channel. You're not missing out anything. But what I put on the Patreon bonus content are behind the scenes stuff, inside jokes, things that adds more dimension to the story, but not necessarily something that the mainstream audience would find interesting. You get what I mean?
So your only fan stuff, lah.
Yeah. Only fan stuff. Like one of the latest one I put up, my interview together with, what's her name? Elix, right? I have Elix confession, but Elix talked about how she saw a shadow inside me. And how it looked like. So to general mainstream audience, like, I don't care about Eugene and what is black inside him. But for the patrons, these are the sort of stuff that would be something to talk about.
All right. Mm.
Wow. So today we got three confessions for you. All of them told to me by people in the force, either still serving or ex.
Mm-hmm. Ah, okay. Right? And I assume they're all anonymous because it's quite sensitive, right?
Very sensitive. Matters. Yeah. Mm. So I have taken the liberty to change some of the pertinent details that would lead to the identity, but the confession itself, the supernatural side, are still very much intact. You're not losing out anything on that.
So exciting. Yeah. Wow. Okay. Any overall intro to the topic? Why did you choose these three in particular?
So when topics about death row has always interest me, I was more curious than anything else, and I always wanted to find out the guy who hanged Adrian Lim.
Mm.
Right, and there's also one time the confessions, or is it diary of executioner or something? Somebody was right, a retired executioner was telling about his story, and right. most of these stories are always very vanilla, very kosher, nothing to do with supernatural. But you have ghosts in school, ghosts in army camp, ghosts in every part of Singapore. You're telling me the place that you kill people have no ghosts? You're telling me that? I don't buy that for a second, right? So I've always been interested in looking for someone who has insights into this department, and I found someone. Retired guy, old man. He was active in the 70s, 80s, 90s, and then, you know, not so much now. So he was telling me a lot of stories, and I was sitting there enthralled for almost an hour. And of course, I'm going to ask him the important question: do you have any friends I can talk to?
Right.
So that's how I got into the rabbit hole. But topics like this, it's very fascinating when you get to hear these people talk. I wish I could video them because they are so animated and they're recalling from memories. And I'm struggling to try to remember all the details. Hopefully I did a good job. So we have three confessions. The first one that, John, if you do the honors and read it for us.
Sure.
It's called Blinded from Truth. Okay. And we talk about black magic. And we wonder, if black magic is so powerful, why do people who are criminals use it to their advantage? And this story talks about that. John, nice. Over to you.
Blinded from the truth. The details of this case have been changed to protect the identity of the confessor. In my nearly four decades in this field, there's one case that baffles me till today. And with the incredulity of how the case had come to such an abrupt close, I can only describe whatever had happened to be nothing short of the supernatural at play. It's not uncommon for people to seek religious or divine help, especially on death row. Many have last-minute confessions and conversions. At the gallery, during the execution, there would be prayers, large-scale rituals, all done in hope of a miracle. So far, I've never come across any miracles, except for this one time. I took over the case from another colleague, and from what the documents were that I read, this was a case that had no reason to be reopened. And yet, it was. I prepared my notes for court the next day, and before I left the office, my colleague grabbed my arm and said, "Whatever you do, don't look into his eyes." But not looking into someone's eyes doesn't come naturally at all. And when I locked eyes with the accused, I immediately felt drawn into his gaze. What I thought I saw was that his eyes were black. There were no whites at all. I pulled my gaze away after he sat down. And when the accused was talking, for some reason, I couldn't make sense of his words at all. It was as if I was listening but not comprehending or not processing what was being said. The judge, however, seems to have heard it very clearly and, to cut the long story short, overturned the previous verdict. When I got back to the office and told my colleague what happened, he opened up and said he believed the accused was dabbling in black magic. The accused was a part owner of an antique furniture importing business and travels to Indonesia very regularly. He said the things he encountered during the travels and the trial and after left him fully spooked out, and that was why he was declining to continue handling the case. And what was that person guilty of? Ritual killing. He was caught when the authorities searched his warehouse and discovered the bodies of his victims stored in wooden cabinets and trunks.
Mm.
Wow. I think that's the furniture dealer you need to buy all your furniture from, Eugene. Like, send him to jail and give me all the furniture for your museum.
Yeah.
So, wait. So, he was convicted. And then, for no reason, the trial was reopened.
Yeah.
And then overturned.
Mm-hmm.
So, he went free.
Yeah. And wow. Blinded by truth, because when he was there in the courtroom, after looking at the guy's eyes, he prepared the previous night. When he went back, he looked at his notes. It was all blank. And when the judge was, when he was speaking, the judge was hearing an entirely different narrative compared to what he and his partner was hearing. So it was like, the guy was talking and the confessor heard the words, couldn't process the words. Like, you hear people talking, but nothing goes into process. So you're like, mind fog. Yep. But the judge have heard it and it's like, no, it's almost like the judge was seeing an alternate reality playing out in front of the judge's eyes. And other people, or at least the confessor, couldn't see what the judge saw or heard. And the guy was, he went away scot-free.
So, okay, of course, in case you're wondering, right, the lawyer that's giving the confession is the prosecutor, right? So, did the whole court, I guess, hear what the judge heard? Because, so it was only the prosecution that couldn't see? Or, you know, like, did everybody else, you know, sort of go into this fugue state and couldn't process, and only the judge was... Because we don't do jury trial, right?
Yeah, so it's no, just no jury judge trial, to decide. Yeah. So it's like a closed door judge, the lawyers.
Yeah, so so what did the others see? Like, for example, the court stenographer, what was she typing?
Yeah, so I asked that as well, right? So he says, he wanted to call for for the stenographer to reveal what was written, but again, it was denied.
Quite interesting.
Yeah.
I wish there was more detail, because I think we've all seen court dramas. We all know how things go. So, you know, it would be very, very easy to imagine, you know.
Also, to give you a bit of context,
how
right?
How perplexing it will look, you know, yeah?
To give you a context, when I asked what is, why isn't it recorded? Is there any cameras? This was before that era of cameras and everything.
When was this?
This, I think, it happened in the 70s.
Right. Mm. Wow. Interesting.
He was a young man, one of the first few cases that he picked up.
I feel it's kind of wicked of the colleague to, number one, drop the case, right? One day before. I mean, this is not helping, you know? And then after that, barely give your colleague any clues. I mean, just one cryptic clue, right? Like, oh, don't look into his eyes. There's no explanation why, you know? I don't know. I mean, if you were told suddenly, you know, don't look into his eyes with no context, would you believe? Would you follow? No, right? You wouldn't, right?
I mean, all the more, I'd be so curious. Like, you exactly make me want to look into his eyes. Look.
Yeah, so saboing the case, right? You know? At least, you know, even if you're not sure whether your colleague will believe you or not, you know, if you say black magic, at least people might takut a bit, right? You know, people might be a bit nervous, you know, but you're not warning him of anything. Okay, first of all, the magic is in his eyes, is it? So the eyes cast the spell, lah.
Yeah, right?
You know, like those movies where suddenly the eyes got spiral, but in this case, it went all black, right? All black. Then, I guess, if looking into his eyes makes you not here, wouldn't most of the people in court have gonna?
Yeah, I would think so. But what really got me thinking...
Wouldn't the judge have gonna also? Because the judge must have looked him in the eyes.
So what got me thinking is,
mm.
what I understand about judges or people in position of authority, they are usually protected. Naturally protected. Like, I was told in this other confessor... because she was a director of a government institution, one of the departments, she has some natural pangkat that she has the ability to chase away the spirits in her department. So in this case, the judge would be the main authority figure in that room. But for the spell to work on either him or her, I'm guessing that this was not a one-off thing. This was not a magic that happened because he looked through my eyes. It was a magic that was prepared way beforehand. This was things that were done outside of the court. And the court was just the final battlefield. And everything was already prime. Which means perhaps outside the person could be feeding him something, who have a photo of the judge, putting some magic, some Kong Tao. Even he says he goes to Indonesia a lot. So I'm guessing this has a lot to do with Indonesian magic or rituals.
So you're saying that it was something that it was a long game, lah. It was not a last minute gamble in that retrial, but it was something that was already put in place. The judge was already compromised. And the only person who he needed to take care of at the trial is the prosecutor.
Yeah.
So then I flip the question around. Why wasn't the prosecutor compromised? Right? If you can compromise the judge, if you can Kong Tao the judge, then why can't you
Maybe
Kong Tao
the prosecutor was already compromised. That was why the colleague dropped the case and passed it on to the newbie to take over. Hoping that fresh, untouched, coming in, don't look to the eyes, don't know what else to tell him, don't want to scare the guy, just go, don't look to the eyes. But
that's a possible hypothesis, but I guess if your Kong Tao is of the kind that the person knows fully that they're Kong Tao and can warn people that, I cannot compromise, then somehow that seems to be like black magic without a backup plan, right? You know, that he was not in enough of a haze, you know? I would have thought, if you are able to act upon the thing so clearly, because I mean it's so easy to transfer the case to someone else, what? Anyone in the company can do it, right? So you know, your best protection if you're going to cast a spell like that is make sure the person doesn't know that you've cast a spell.
Yeah.
Right, so I wonder, any theories, guys, about how the magic might have worked, right? We're sort of speculating a little bit, right? Because certainly not a lot of detail was given to us, and you know, maybe that would compromise people, you know. But I want to know what you think. Was it a long game and the whole court was compromised, or was it something that was being done on the spot? I mean, the magic was so powerful that he was going to sway everyone on the spot. He just needed the one person who was sabo everything, the prosecutor, to be blocked, you know, right, to Gui Zheyan, you know. And what was different about him, right? You know, why was he different? Maybe I'm wondering whether, how about this possibility? He couldn't process anything. I was gonna say he couldn't process anything because he was protected, and so he couldn't hear the lies. Either way, the bad guy still wins, lah.
Yeah.
You know, so was it a spell to deliberately disguise things for this person? Or was it a spell to, you know, to glamour everybody else? And because he was immune to the glamour, he just got this, you know, like watching TV with the white snow, right? It's like, I just see static. You know? Curious. I don't know. What's your theory, Eugene?
I'm thinking this is a long game. For this sort, but one of the easier explanation, if I'm just going to go with this one, M. Rizan BM says it sounds more like corruption instead of black magic. And guys, understand that this was in the 70s, yeah. Back then, the triads were very strong. They were, you know, murder was still happening, and perhaps there could be a corruption case. But then, what made me feel that there was supernatural involved was because of the confession that the prosecutor, the new guy, that young lawyer upstart, he was just blinded. He couldn't perform. And he was not corrupted. I mean, let's make the assumption that he was not corrupted, right? He couldn't perform. He was just blinded. So if you take that into consideration, then there seemed to be some spell involved. And somehow spells in the 70s, the 80s, pre-90s, they were a lot stronger than the spells today. It seems like when people believe in the supernatural less and less, the powers that can affect us also diminish. Okay, before we missed out, I want to say thank you to Chua Elaine and Raven for their blessings. Thank you very much. Haven't seen Chua Elaine in a long while.
Yeah, hello, hello, hello.
KK Heng also is back today. Also haven't seen him in a long while.
Hello, KK. Okay, so there are some theories here, right? So Ezekiel has a hint, useful hint for all of you. There's a saying, to know if anyone kena gong tao, check the bottom of his eyeball for a black marking. Oh, as in bottom of the eyeball, as in the bottom of his eye lah. No need to dig out his eyeball and check lah. Right, just check the lower part of his eyes for a black mark. Oh, interesting. Okay. Groven has an interesting theory. Maybe the dude who said not to look in the eyes was in on it. I like that. Because knowing that if I say don't look into his eyes, the first thing you will do is look into his eyes, right? So someone needs to guarantee that that happens.
It's like an Agatha Christie novel, man.
Yeah, I mean, you know. Scully, one day they send you the blind lawyer, then win.
Daredevil.
Yes, exactly, right? Yes, Daredevil. I was trying to remember his name. It is frightening. Okay, Mr. David is saying, it's frightening to believe that one person can hypnotize everyone in the courtroom at the same time. So have to agree with Eugene's theory. Everyone was slowly compromised. Mm. Slowly, yeah. Slowly. True. To cast a mass sort of mass hypnosis kind of spell like that is pretty impressive and probably quite ambitious. Actually, yeah, and actually, if you could cast a mass hypnosis, then why can't you include this lawyer in it? Mm. Right? Mm. You know, why does this lawyer have to be singled out for special treatment? Mm. You know? So I am curious. I guess for me, I'm just wondering whether there were two spells being cast, or whether it was one spell being cast, but this lawyer is protected from it somehow, you know, or whether there was only one spell being cast on him and everyone else has been, like Eugene said, slowly compromised over time, you know. So, well, quite a few different approaches, quite interesting. Okay.
And also the other thing I would like to ask is what kind of immense power that you would have to sell your soul to? Because you're already going to go to the gallows, right? What else you have to lose? If you're trying to survive and you are doomed to die, then sell your soul lah. Either way, just to live. And also, if you look at ritual killing, the word was used was ritual killing. So this guy was already dabbling in something ritualistic.
Yeah. I think. Oh, I don't think he made another deal. I think this is just part of the deal.
Part of the deal, right?
You know. Yeah, and like I already offer so many bodies, right? Cabinets and trunks full of them. Mm. So, you know, I'm pretty sure that he was being protected already, you know, and perhaps something went wrong and he got caught, first of all, where he shouldn't have gotten caught. He got sentenced, shouldn't have happened. But hey, no problem. I will get you out at the last minute.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. Or was it something that he had to do extra last minute, right? Like, but I figure it's not a selling your soul for this one victory in court. Lah. I think his soul
already sold
and mortgaged over and over again. You know? So I don't know what he had to offer for this last one. Mm. I tell you. He had to offer the soul of everyone else in court. Wow.
But speaking of all this black magic and dabbling and selling our souls, our next confession talks very much about this topic. And without revealing the name, we're going to tell the confession first. And if you know who we are talking about, leave the name in the comment section. How about that, John? What do you think?
I think it will happen within the first 5 seconds. But okay, we can try. We can try. Okay, so let us know in the comments. Let's see who's the first, okay, to figure out who this story is about.
Once again, the sign up for the live show link is above. Click on it. You can get your tickets now before the 30th, where you're still on the reserve list. But for now, let's hear a little ad from us and from the advertisers. Supernatural Confessions was created as a safe space for people to share their paranormal encounters. If you or someone you know has a strange encounter to share, we want to hear about it. You can type it to us, send us a voice memo, or even meet me for a face-to-face interview. Visit supernaturalconfessions.com for more info. Friday. Welcome back to the Supernatural Confessions Friday Night Lives. This is our second confession, titled "I Will Return," confession by Anonymous. In the late 1980s, a serial killer in Singapore was sentenced to death by hanging, and he was unrepentant till the very end. His last words were, "I will return," and some of us believe he did. The media dubbed him a charlatan who murdered children without reason. The reason for that is not to cause public hysteria. People were already reacting out of fear during the court proceedings, with many parents opting not to let their children attend school for fear that a copycat killer will take over. You add that fear with the supernatural, and the police will have more complexities on their hands to deal with. Gaining public confidence is of utmost importance. For those of us who had been following the case, we believe that the serial killer was just two more killings shy of reaching his goal. But somewhere along the way, he screwed up his precepts or something to that effect, I was told. According to my colleagues who were directly on the front line, they couldn't see him with their eyes. They had been already investigating him and knew where he was. But when they tried to follow him, he would disappear, only to appear in other places. I can neither confirm nor deny this next part of the story. It's only from hearsay. But the investigating officers had consulted various spiritual masters. The victim's parents also had a Malay magic practitioner helping them out. Maybe through overwhelming countering supernatural forces at play, the killer was swiftly caught and put away before he could complete his personal mission. But let's not discount real police work here. Magic or not, real time and resources were spent on this case, and it's through proper police procedure that we were able to put an end to this terror, okay? In his cell, where he had stayed, a small patch of flowers where he had tended to, like a mini garden. The strange thing is that this mini garden was thriving even when no one else was taking care of it. This next part, I cannot confirm, but it was said that those who were directly involved in his case or had been there during his hanging, all of them had some form of accidents or series of paranormal encounters after his death. When I dug further into this case, I learned that even though the killer was reported to be worshipping a renowned deity of repute, what was actually in the idols he had at home was a very different entity. This entity was dark, malevolent, and was willing to grant him godlike powers in exchange for the lives he took. Though he is painted out as a con man, I personally believe that he's got something to aid him as well. Sure, maybe he's a con man, but I've seen con men and they're axed. This person was almost able to hypnotize people to do his bidding. You have heard about cult leaders with such magnetic personalities. I believe that they too were aided by this same or similar dark force.
So we have all sorts of guesses. Okay, not all sorts of guesses. There are two main guesses. So most of them said Adrian, Alim, someone says, your friend. Okay. And Papa, your uncle. And then a few people said Mona. Interesting choice. But yeah, it's very obvious. It is
Adrian Lim. But if this happened in Malaysia, yes, it would be Mona, because Adrian Lim's story and Mona were quite in parallel.
Wow.
Frankie, thank you very much. Too bad I cannot attend a live so much, so I will try next round. Next round will be next year, 2025.
Plan early. Yeah. Okay. Gareth sent a joke. Then would you like to read this joke?
Okay, you read. I have not read it. Okay.
It's not a riddle.
Okay.
It's just a joke. Okay. Joke of the day. The waiter asked the guest at the restaurant, "Can I push your stool in?" And the guest says, "Let's see how the dinner goes first." Okay. At first, it's kind of like, "Oh, that's gross." And then you sort of go, "Oh, wow, that's like gross and perverted." Okay.
I wonder how many people, it's like, all of our fans now just watching this and going, "Why? What about the stool? Stool, you know?"
If you don't get it, please ask. I was gonna ask them just discuss among themselves. Like, this type of thing, we don't have to
teach. Spell it out for them. Okay.
But thank you, Gareth, for that very graphic image. Okay. So yes, it was Adrian Lim. Very interesting. Like, okay, so Adrian Lim, in the end, actually, the body count was not as high as you imagine, right? You know, I think two, right? Still two is too many, but you know, yeah, it was not sort of American standard, okay. It's interesting that in this the confessor says that he supposes that he was too away from achieving his unlocking whatever achievement he wanted, which is four. So I'm like, okay, very interesting. And the idea, talking about his entity. So, okay, I mean, I haven't done extensive research into Adrian Lim. Many have, and some of you may know much more about it, right? But if I'm not mistaken, there was no one particular sort of deity or entity that he was sort of focused on. I think there were many images found in his home.
But he had one main one. He had
What was the main one?
Kali.
Was that the main one?
Kali Ma is the main one. And he has the Kuan Yin Ma there. He got a few other idols there, but Kali was the main.
Because, yeah, I mean, I remember reading that he even had like an image of Jesus there.
Yeah.
So, you know, he was very inclusive in his cult leadership, you know. And they had blood smeared on it and everything like that, right? Yeah. You know, but I guess because there's such a sort of overlap, right, and sort of a chapalang of entities, deities, right, it is quite easy, I guess, you know, for some other darker entity to be behind all this, you know, and sort of rather than hiding behind one idol, it's hiding behind this multitude of idols, yeah. Right? You know, which of course sells a better deal, right? Mm. It's quite interesting, I think, considering that this happened in the 80s, you know, it would have been quite wonderful and fantastical, you know, to sort of come across a cult that has multiple gods across all the cultures. It would sound pretty cool to someone who is seeking spiritual guidance, right? You know, it would sound like the hottest new thing, man. You know, you know, it's the kind of interfaith thing that's now becoming very hip and very popular, right? So Adrian Lim was a very early adopter of interfaith, but you know, and turning it into a ritualized way, because the thing about religion, right, is that you know, it has to function on two levels, right, to fulfill society, right. For some need it to be highly conceptual, right? It's philosophical. It basic tenets for living, and then others need it to be a comforting set of rituals. Just tell me what to do to guarantee my blessing. You know, I don't want to think too hard. I don't want to study for years. I just want to do the ritual, burn the joss stick, burn this, burn that, sacrifice this, and guarantee chop. I'm blessed. You know, so it has to happen on both, and I think Adrian Lim kind of managed to achieve both, you know? He must have told some fantastic sort of theological stories to spin his belief system. And then at the same time, you know, I mean, clearly there were ritual things, right, that you had to do, you know, involving sex as well as murder, you know? So very good lay on both ends. very good. So don't let them tell you that Singapore doesn't do good stuff. We are as good as the US in coming out with kooks and crazies.
Yeah.
But yeah, let us know your thoughts on Adrian Lim. And if you know anything that's very exciting that we don't know, please tell us.
I met a cab driver. You know, remember I always told you guys that whenever I sit in a Grab or a cab, first thing I ask is, uncle got ghost story or not? Right? So again, this is... take this entire with a pinch of salt, because I cannot verify his identity. And I had a screen capture of his name, because I wanted to research who he was and whether he's really who he said he was. He said he was actually a retired policeman and he was involved in the case. Right? And he was in the Topayo block. They really knew where he was. They were trying to find him, right? They couldn't find his house. They couldn't find him. They were walking left, right, checking almost every house. All of the police couldn't find him, right? And he said that the police force actually consulted a spiritual master. The victim's family also were involved with their own spiritual master, and together they have this combined prayer.
Mm.
And after the prayer, the spiritual master says, "You have a window of opportunity. Go find him now." That's when they turned around, they found the blood stains, and then they followed the blood trail to his house. It was only through the spell casting.
Wow, it's like taking down the force field on the Death Star like that. Like, wow. Yeah. Wow.
So in my mind, I was thinking, if you are that retired policeman, what are you doing driving Grab? Again, you know, I don't pass judgment, but this is a high profile case. A lot of the investigating officers, they were already known to public, but there were a lot who's not known. So I'm guessing this guy was involved in the case, but he's not the man.
I'm sure everyone in the police force was involved in the case. Mm. You know, I mean, you know, this is this is not the United States where there's all these jurisdictions like, you know, I'm the Toa Payoh police, you don't come and cross into my territory, I'm Tokyo, you know, kind of thing, right? You know, if we're involved, we're involved, right? You know, that one National Day and all the whole police force is there. So I'm sure Adrian Lim warranted as much as National Day, you know? So Dan C is sharing, my grandmother knew Adrian Lim. I was almost drafted. And Adrian told my grandma that I was chosen by God.
Walao, so close. Wow.
Wow, then, wow. Nearly, you know. Do you remember like meeting him? Were you like, you know, interviewed, auditioned, you know? America's next cult leader. You know? Dan C, please tell us a little bit more about it. Do you remember how old you were when you were drafted? I'm very curious to know. Okay, so nearly another nearly story, right? And this shows you how, you know, while Eugene was saying, you know, how there were supernatural alliances to break down the force field so that you could find a weak spot and all that. And so much drama going on, right? In the meantime, I was in BMT. I was in Beach Road Camp during NS, and one of my guys in the camp, right, told me that his family lived in Toa Payoh, and they were bugged by all these noises from upstairs, you know, and strange chanting and strange music and thumping sounds and all that, right? And they were like continuously trying to get up the courage to complain, lah. You know, you don't really want to get in trouble with your neighbors, but sometimes it's a bit too much, right? And just when they finally decided this is too much, we want to complain, and they went up to complain, the police were there, and it was Adrian Lim.
Oh,
they were living in the flat under Adrian Lim.
Wow.
I'm like, okay, that is really a nearly. Imagine if you knock on his door in the middle of a ritual. You know, come in, drink some tea.
Oh, that's, you know, it.
Yeah, if you had complained one day earlier, who knows, man? Mm. You know, he would have reached his goal. Wow.
Okay, so Dancy replied. Dancy said,
yes.
I was only about 3 to 4 years old. My grandma actually asked my dad's permission to bring me to Adrian Lim. Lucky my dad refused, because the grandma is a tanky and that's how she knows Adrian Lim.
Wow, same. Your grandma. Wow. Okay.
Close call.
Okay, what was your grandma told? You know, did your grandma buy into all his? Wow. Is your grandma still around? And or did you ask her? What was the spiel that Adrian gave your grandma? Right, what was promised? You know, if you were chosen by God, then
be
what
the
would
third
you
wife.
Become? What would you become, right? Please tell us a little bit more about the deal that was offered. Because if your grandma actually thought about bringing you there, it must have been a good deal.
Yeah.
Right? So please tell us more, because, wow, you don't hear much about what he offered to the people, right? So, what's the sell? What was the sell? You know, KK Heng also thinks.
You know what, Dancy, if you can text me your number, my number is 94594931. I'll bring
he
you
will
on
rush
the show.
To you right now.
No, I'll bring you on the show. I'll bring you on the show right now. Let's hear from you what it was like, okay? Yeah. This is like life.
There's a bestseller in this, okay? I was almost Adrian Lim's third wife. Okay, Obi-Wan Kenobi is saying, Adrian Lim has a son. My friend knew his son.
Mm.
Oh, okay. Who knows about the son? And how old was the son? Wow, okay. And is your friend still in touch with the son? Let's get the son on the show. You know? since we're doing that. You know? Wow. Okay, Sahid.
Supernatural Sadia Confessions, new show, True Crime.
Sadia is saying, I live next block to Adrian Lim, and I saw the boy's bloodstains from under the tree to his block.
Wow.
Oh, wow. Okay, wow,
The spell never cover your eyes.
But that's also a pretty long trail of blood. Mm. You know? Wow, interesting. I do know one random fact, which is that Adrian Lim was an ACS boy.
Kantangan, cak kantangan. Quite smart.
Yeah. not mentioned at reunions. Yeah. In the yearbook, right? Most likely to. Who was in his batch? That'll be very interesting.
Oh man, yeah.
Wow. Who was classmates? I mean, Adrian Lim living as a Singaporean must have come across a million people, right? You know? Unlike American cult leaders who can live, you know, sort of in obscurity on a farm somewhere, you know, Singapore, you know? Adrian Lim must have gone army. What did he do in army? You know? So wow, there's a lot to find out, huh? Interesting. Who wants to do a SC special on the life and times of Adrian Lim to find out where he discovered the magic and how he got drawn into it, you know, rather than sort of assuming that he's just equal, you know, Adrian Lim equals black magic. There must have been a whole journey, right, of dabbling with things. Was he playing Ouija last time? You know, what happened? So many confessions related to this, you know. Gareth Cole says ACS doesn't claim him. I bet not, you know. Yeah, Mark Shippo very excited. We need this confession on the last episode next week.
Wow. Activated.
Okay, so we want someone's grandma. Okay.
But you guys know my number is 9459-4931. Once again, 9459-4931 plus 65 for country code to reach out to me and well, let's set up this interview, right? If grandma's still around.
Awesome, awesome. Wow, anything else about this confession though? Eugene, any thoughts about the confession? What strikes you?
Wait, I need to go and read again.
you just read it.
No, we went off so far off tangent.
That's true.
It is said, okay, deny. Okay, we talk about the police.
What do you think about the garden?
The
garden's a small point. It's not a very dark point, but it's a very interesting point.
Okay, because it's about I will return, right? She said I will return. So the confessor said that he believes that Adrian Lim has returned by virtue that his garden is no water, nothing at all, no one's taking care of it, but it's still thriving. So to him, the confessor says, that to me is Adrian Lim is back. He is there. And post death, the people who were there for his hanging were all affected. They all complained after that. They were afflicted by bad luck, accidents, illness. And according to the confessor, which cannot be verified, he can't verify as well, there were some of them which is death, resulted in death. From the judges to the lawyers. I see the policeman is still going around giving talks. He never not affected. You know, but people who were there, one by one, they were taken out. That was what he said.
Okay, no, these are the people who were at the hanging. Not necessarily the people who were responsible for his conviction or anything.
Maybe.
But the people who were present, right? At the moment when his soul left his body, you know. Wow. If this was a film, I would imagine that his soul leaves his body and like one portion goes into everyone who's present. You know, and then turns them all into like, you know, his cult lah, basically, you know. What I didn't expect is that he would go into a garden and then, you know, and I wonder where that garden is now. Is it still thriving? It must be a jungle by now. You know, is there like a little corner somewhere in the prison that, you know, there's a garden that nobody dares to remove?
Apparently that's what it is lah. There's a garden that no one dares touch, remove, and it's still thriving. No one's touched it.
Yikes. Oh, that's interesting. That is the beginning of a horror movie. There's a bench in the garden, and if you sit under that tree, you know, wow. Wow. Okay. So there's a lot of potential in this. There's a lot of potential in this. And I don't think it's been explored much, right? The supernatural sort of development of Adrian Lim and his cult beliefs, and of course the aftermath, right? You know, how do you know, is he trying to gather forces again? You know, is there something going on? It's been a while.
Okay.
You know, he's had lots of time. Is there a new Adrian Lim coming?
If we can do our research and we can find out enough to put together a documentary, I tell you, this is a Netflix special ready to happen. Okay, Netflix, you're watching this. We are your people who will be doing this research.
for sure, man. Wow. We'll call it Adrian's Garden. In the garden of evil.
Yeah.
Wow, exciting. So Samuel is sharing. Hello, Samuel. Yeah. Okay, Samuel is sharing. According to Wikipedia, Adrian was born in 1942. Oh, start of the war. Eldest of a low-income family, dropped out of ACS. Ah, okay, didn't graduate from ACS. Okay. Oh, interesting. I think that, this is a bit late. You know, this research should have started like 20 years ago, you know, when all the people involved were still around, you know. Might be hard to catch other people.
Better
now.
Catch them before they are dead, before they're old.
True. That's very true. So every cab driver.
They are more likely to share because last time it'll be too soon.
That's true. Mm. It is safe now. Now that you're driving the Uber, you can tell the story. Wow, interesting. I mean, it is probably the most sort of dramatic and still mysterious cases that we've ever had. You know, and now you realize, oh, there's a whole lot of it that's never been explored, you know, from the supernatural perspective, which is the duty of the MSA. So we need to form an MSA research team, okay, to do this, right? Wow, okay. Maybe we'll sort of figure out a way to do this properly and then we can like dig up new information. Mm. Wow, nice. If there's anyone who's interested, please let us know.
All right. Okay, we got now the time is 11 o'clock. We are good for time, guys. Today we are good for time,
Is there a featured confession today?
God. It's still Iliex. Iliex talking about Block 5, Changi Village. We're still in Changi. Giving Changi ghost stories.
It's got Changi always a lot.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So someone is sharing something here. It's quite interesting. So Joel Goh and then several of the others reminded us, right? There's a horror film based on a similar plot. I'm not sure if you're thinking of the same one, but there is a Singaporean film about the life of Adrian Lim, which I watched many, many years ago. It's called Medium Rare.
Voila.
And it's very exciting. It starred Lim Kay Siu and Margaret Chan. Yes. I think Lim Kay Siu played Adrian Lim. So, I don't know where to go and find it now. Maybe it's in the Singapore Film Archive. Mm. Last time it was a video that you could rent, right, from the video shop. Okay, but it was censored because there were like, you know, ritual scenes and, you know, sort of semi-nude ritual scenes which were edited out. So I've never seen the full version actually. Wow, if we can find that, let's do a screening, man. Okay. Let's do a medium rare screening.
Sure, some of our listeners are going, huh? Video? Video shop? What are you talking about, John?
Okay. Yeah, okay. For some of you, video is like a cassette tape with images. Cassette tape is...
Yeah, and then you cannot press button to jump 5 seconds, 10 seconds, for you must press to rewind.
I Google it. I just go and Google it. So Abun is asking a very important question. Where is the collection of his artifacts kept?
I also want.
Wow. Where in the museum of the police academy, you know, which basement was it all stored in? Or was it wisely destroyed? I bet it was destroyed. You know, given how superstitious we would have been back then in the 80s, right? Much more so than now. No one's going to keep that in a storeroom somewhere. Come on, you know? I mean, look at it this way, right? It's like, no, I always wondered, right? You know, when watching the Conjuring series, it's like, no way that Ed and Louise Warren could have been Asian. No Asian is going to roja all those cursed items into one room like that, you know, like some trophy room for fun, and then count that, oh yes, a few locks will take care of everything.
Man, not Asian for sure.
And then the priest come once a month or once a week. I'm like, please, the priest will be gobbled up
the moment he steps in, you know. So we don't play with these things, right? Only Eugene will want to think of.
I take one for the team. I take one for you guys.
Yeah, but I cannot imagine that they would have been stored, right? No. And yet, officially, you're not supposed to destroy these things.
Evidence,
right?
Because, it's in the evidence locker.
Yeah, exactly. It's evidence. Every blood smeared idol had to be kept. Wow. So is it lying around somewhere in some, you know, in some black museum of our police force? Okay, those of you who are in the police or know anyone in the police, go and find out. Go and find out. Okay, we want to know, man.
I like this comment from Joel Go. Joel Go hardly, type in the comment section. He'll just listen quietly. He writes, with regards to the medium rare tape, he says it's on a mission henceforth.
Yes. If anyone can find it, Joel can find it.
Yeah. Okay. And to be fair,
I challenge you, find the videotape.
To be fair, that Mohammed Rizal got the... He says medium rare sounds like a 90s porn title.
Yeah, it kind of looked a bit like a porn title too. Okay, so someone says, I remember hearing a story that went around talking about how the room that contained the Adrian Lim items in the old police academy is rife with haunted activity.
For sure.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I wonder if all the stories of the old police academy are because they stored the stuff in one room.
Now we know. We explained
right,
it.
The whole place is cursed. Right. Actually, to be very, very practical about it, if there is such a room with all those things in there, wouldn't we have heard about it? Not the room itself, but you would know about the place itself.
Cover up, lah.
It would be such a vortex. No, but the stories, not the reason, not the reason, right? You just need to triangulate the accounts, right? Like all your confessions, maybe it's Yishun, but all the weirdness of Singapore seems to emanate from this one plot of land. You know.
You know where, John? I've got a feeling. What? I know where the police store all this cursed item.
Old Changi Hospital.
In a bunker under Old Changi Hospital. That's where they keep all this. The Singapore's X-Files division is hidden under the hill of Old Changi Hospital.
Wow, this is our Area 51, isn't it?
Kai Alchemy says, prison wardens have said, and I heard this as well as rumors, hearsay, that he levitated in his cell.
Wow. Mm,
this is quite a popular hearsay about Adrian Lim.
Wow, levitated. Not bad. Mm. Okay, it just means that his meditation very high level.
Okay. Wow.
Interesting.
Okay, anything more about Adrian Lim before we, Scully turned you're going to find a medium rare tape, they become like the ring curse because it's Adrian Lim's.
Oh.
Adrian Lim's spirit has returned. He climbs out of the television.
He's in the tape. Oh, no. No, we know he's not on the tape because he's in a potted plant somewhere. Okay, so I'm kind of scared now that some of my plants may have been like grafted from the plants from the museum, from the prison. Mm. Okay, I'm just okay. CAZ, hi, first time listener from Perth. Ayo, what a strange episode you're listening to. Welcome, and you have to go back and listen to the whole thing. Mm. Okay, maybe Adrian don't want me to talk. Oh, very confusing. Okay.
Why is confusing? Because Kai Alchemy is RSVP by Grace, except that she got, for some reason, she got blocked by YouTube for spamming.
Yes, that's not some reason. That is the reason.
Or she says maybe Adrian doesn't want her to talk.
Anyway, it's already been tagged at the top, right? It's been pinned at the top, so that's quite easy.
Victor says something. When I was in PA Police Academy, not the People's Association.
Not People's Association.
They said that the knife Alim used was displayed at the Police Heritage Museum, which was above the barrack I stayed in.
Wow.
Victor, where don't just stop there. Tell us more.
Where is the museum now? And is the knife still there?
At
interesting.
PA.
At the new PA?
He can rent his apartment for one night.
No lah.
Met the current tenant.
That's a suggestion.
And have a seance party there.
Okay, so if I was the person who ended up buying Adrian Lim's apartment, I would so Airbnb this place, right? I would I make so much money, okay, renting it out as a, yeah, as a one night stay, one night Adrian Lim stay. Wow,
maybe I'm gonna ketuk pintu lah. Hello, excuse me, is your house out for rent? Can I rent and open my museum there?
Do you think the person even knows? I'm well, sure it's hard not to know, right? The neighbors will be like, "Hey, your house last time,
It's a Christian family, I think. They came in and they was not afraid. Power of God was on their side, and true enough, no stories came out from their family, lah.
Yeah, nah, because it's all in a garden at Changi Prison, ma. So
I so, have yeah. returned as a gardener.
I want water and fertilizer. You know, I'm. Yeah, okay. I mean. Well, the two kids were killed there, right?
Mm.
So, it's if anything is going to haunt them in the apartment, then it's the two kids, like, it's not Adrian, and it's not whatever entity Adrian was dealing with, right? That would have traveled away. So, if it's the two kids, and hopefully those two kids would have found peace,
Yeah.
You know, even though, you know, terrible things happened to them, but I would like to think that they moved on, you know, because, yeah, a haunting is a very sad place to end up, you know? I wonder if, yeah, Imagine Malayans, are the current tenants bothered by a lot of visitors? They will be bothered by Eugene very soon.
Excuse me. You know, because this is like the corridor, right? So you can see the window, then you see me. Excuse me.
This is where you turn up and you flash your MSA credentials, right? Like, I'm Eugene, Agent Eugene from the MSA.
Sunglasses with my earpiece on.
Yeah. Soon. we need to EMF your house, you know? So cute. Okay, that's a Netflix series to come, okay? The MSA files, okay?
Okay, now let's go on to our next confession. The time now is 11:09. If you have just joined us, like Ines, Sharon, hello. And if you want to, if you're find that today's confessions are really interesting, click the dollar sign below, give us a super chat, you know, give us a comment. It would be much appreciated. Also, if you want to join us as a Patreon, this is how you can do it. Thank you for listening to the Supernatural Confessions podcast. If you are enjoying the show and would like to support our efforts, you can help by giving us a 5-star review or by becoming a patron by signing up for a monthly membership fee that starts from as low as $5. Check out the perks at patreon.com/supernaturalconfessions. That's patreon.com/supernaturalconfessions. Or if you feel like showing a simple gesture of appreciation, you can buy us a cup of coffee or two at buymeacoffee.com/superconfess. And now, let's get back to the show. All right, John, are you ready?
Yeah, this is my favorite confession.
Okay.
Come, context.
Okay, the context of this is the gangster who begged for death. Now, this was told to me by a retired policeman who talked about how he was there to see hanging of a lot of gang leaders or gang members, because this was a time where they were doing some operation, was it Dragnet or something, and they were arresting a lot of people. And he says he sees many weird things as a police officer, but this one time, it defies all possibility of science. And I believe this happened somewhere in the late 70s or the early 80s.
Ooh, okay, nice.
The gangster who begged for death. Jonathan, take it away.
Back in the heyday of gangsterism and triad clans, murder was very rampant. The police were scared of it. Unlike the gangsters of today, or kacang puteh, small fry, little kids, compared to last time. Most have heard, some have seen, how a single gangster can fight off an entire group of parang wielders and come out unscratched. That fella, we all will say, he got play barang one. Rumor was that these fellows have supernatural help. There's also the time when there was a boom in the black market, if you know what I mean. Everyone and their grandmother started selling barang. Malay ones used tangkal and animal pelts. The Chinese ones used talisman tattoos. The Thai and Cambodian ones use amulets, needles. But not everyone could get the real deal. Only a few were legit. And maybe let's just say only a few players had barang that was most effective. Those that can fight will climb up the ranks very quickly. Most taking on key roles as the right-hand man to the boss, you know, doing their dirty work. Punggol Point was a popular location for bodies to disappear. Those who know what I'm talking about will know where it is. Now there's a block of new flats over that spot, so let's not ruin people's property prices, lah. During the Triad crackdown operations in the 70s, after mob hits were getting out of hand, many, many high-profile gang members were arrested and charged. The penalty for murder in Singapore was the death penalty, and still is. Before they were sent to the gallows for hanging, many of these Triad members would request to meet with their followers. But depending on the severity of their crimes, those requests may be declined. When it happens, usually the inmates will make friends with the prison officers. And some of them have been known to help the inmate to take their barang upon themselves. Now, I don't know if this involved actual items being passed on or just taking on the responsibility of maintaining the spirit guardian. Why do these officers do it, you ask? Because power is tempting. And if you know that a particular inmate has legitimate power, why not be the next in line to adopt the power? After all, prison officers also need protection, because back then, life in Singapore was not as safe and peaceful as it is now. Police or not, once you are outside in the public area, you are also mortal. So those who cannot find someone to take over their barang will be in deep trouble. I've seen a few cases of this myself. The worst was this fellow who was struggling on the hanging rope for more than an hour. He just couldn't die. Suffered all the way to the end. Eventually, we had to assist him to break his neck. A few of us were witness to this. Medically, there was no way he could have survived that long. When he was being escorted to the gallows, he literally broke down and begged the officers to help him. But no one was willing to adopt whatever barang he had. When he arrived at the gallows, he started getting hysterical. He said he could see many beings around and they were waiting for him. Very drama, but nothing he did or said swayed anyone. According to my colleagues, after his death, some of them could still see his spirit stuck between worlds, begging them for help. Inmates who were also on death row took over his cell and commented that they can still see him in their cell at night. Some could even talk to him. He was begging them for help. But what was really chilling was that when these inmates were questioned, they all could say exactly the words that he had used right before his hanging. There was only a handful of us present that day of the hanging, and for unrelated inmates to be saying the same thing over a period of different times makes me think that they were not lying about what they saw in their cell. When I asked why no one complained or asked to change cells, they said it's better to have company in the cell, even if it's a ghost, than to be alone waiting for the time to die. For me, this is what I witnessed personally. There were many other stories, of course, of sightings, of strange, unaccountable incidences. But such stories were not uncommon. The prison conditions back then were very different from what they are today. But I believe if you talk to the current batch of prison officers, you will still hear some of these encounters taking place. Wow, that cell, ah. Okay, first of all, I don't know much about the prison system here and what death row is like. I'm assuming there's more than one cell that is used for the final holding, right? Are we talking about the one cell in particular that is now haunted? Because that was the cell that he came out from, you know. And if that is the case, I'm just wondering why the cell? Because that's not where he died. You know, he died, well, you know, on the gallows, right? You know, or, you know, if he had spent time in prison before dying, it would be in his normal cell, not the holding cell. You know, so
no, this was not the holding cell. This was the normal cell. There are a row, because this one I managed to talk to the guy. So you see the part where he says, you know, when he asked questions, that was actually me asking him the question.
Right.
Yeah. So it's his cell, and there's actually this row of cells where it's all for death row inmates. So it's not a holding cell before the gallows. It's he was there waiting for his time to come.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So it's just his normal cell, lah. Yeah. Okay. Interesting.
But what was interesting was, you know, I said, didn't any of these inmates come up to complain they want to change your cell or anything? And he said, funnily enough, these inmates, they prefer having a ghost there than to change cell and be alone in isolation. They rather have a ghost there that they can talk to like a friend. Yeah.
I'm imagining that if I was in a cell and I was hours away from death, I would take comfort from the fact that I have living proof in front of me that I would be back. You know, because here's someone who died and is back.
But I'm not sure that's comforting, because the guy's like, help me, help me. Like, well,
yeah, okay, no, that's true. Like, shut up, just keep quiet. Just say boo. Okay, I don't hear the rest. I want to know you exist. Don't tell me the rest.
Sorry, go on.
But at the same time, then now delving into what happened to him supernaturally, right? So he was in a panic and begging the people around him because he had not passed on the barang, right? And I think a couple of weeks ago, we had a story very, very much along these lines, right? And what happens when the barang doesn't get passed on, you know? The first symptom, of course, was that he wasn't allowed to die easily.
Yeah.
Right. You know, and we hear that a lot happening to like people who have susuk. For example, right? The susuk comes with spirits, and the spirits are not gonna let you slip away. Right. So you suffer, you know, and you know, eventually, you know, they helped him, right? And he managed to pass over. And then what happens, right? What's the next layer of suffering? You know, what do you think? You know, was it simply that he had to now be in his cell, or was it something worse than that?
They said in the confession, it was said that he was between worlds. So, so maybe he was not just stuck in the gallows area, but he was stuck in that compound or in that area. In the same way we talk about how spirits cannot cross sea or spirits cannot move out of the building, I think geographically, could form some form of parameter. The spirit cannot come out of the prison, but he could walk around in that area. And it was also said that in the prison there were other spirits, not just him. So why did he then stay in his cell? Could it be also that in the afterlife or in between worlds, all the aggressive, gung-ho, gangster-like spirits are being themselves in the afterlife? And you may be a big shot gangster now, but when you're in the spirit world, you're up against other bigger shot ghostly gangsters. That's what I think.
That doesn't take into account the fact that the first call on his soul belongs to his barangwat. You know, what I'm hearing there is quite possibly what happens to the normal execution.
Yeah.
You know, that you linger and you linger within this zone because, you know, you can't move out.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the community of everyone else who's also lingering, you know. But this person is special. He did not die normally. He's not going to haunt normally, you know. Why is he still here? You know, what is the deal, right, with his barang, and how does that make his afterlife different?
So to answer that question, because we do have a lot of overseas listeners today, let's explain what Barang is and why, also to answer the question Gareth was asking, why can't leave this world peacefully if we have occult items? Okay, so Barang is actually a Malay word literally translated to things, stuff.
Objects. Yeah.
So colloquially, when we talk about people having the Barang, it means it's an occult item. And what we know about occult items based on this confession is there are different races or different cultural background give you different Barang for protection. You can have a talisman, an amulet, you can put a needle into your under your skin, you can tattoo yourself. So all these things that you use to keep yourself alive, because these are gangsters, they need to be alive. They want to be able to go into a gang fight and come out unscathed.
Yeah.
It's also the thing that prevents you from dying. But now if you are being put in a position where then you are forced to die, the belief is that all these items that you use for protection, they come with an entity. They come with a spirit, almost like a guardian. The Malays has the word for this. What's it called? Puaka. Puaka?
Yeah, right? Puaka. Yeah, it has to be passed on from generation to generation.
Yes. So these are ancient beings, thousands of years old. They need to be passed on to somebody. If not, if they're not passed on, the spirits themselves, I believe, would be considered homeless or without a master. And they're not happy with that. So they will torment you. Now, to answer the question, John, whether the spirits will claim your soul, I'm not sure. Like, say, even if jinn passing on from hand to hand, if you don't pass it on, I don't think the jinn claims your soul. That seems to be more of a biblical kind of demon where your soul is mine, right? So this could be, you are now in the in-between world and the spirit there is like, walao, see lah, now we are both homeless lah, what to do? So that's the bond and contract that prevents moving on, or prevents that anchors down the soul to this world. That's how I see it.
I agree that the idea of claiming souls is a far more Western concept, you know, because here we don't have the same kind of system, right? You have no great evil one that's out to, you know, convert people, you know, and so, and anyway, you know, what would a jinn do with your soul? You know, what would any other spirit do with your soul, right? You know, but by that same logic, I guess, you know, what would they do with your wandering soul? You know, it's just adding to the crowd, right?
Yeah.
You know, and I'm actually wondering whether it's something much, much simpler than that, and in its own way, more frightening, right? Because if you think about this barang as being a curse, okay, a blessing first, but then eventually it becomes a curse, right? And all its power can do is keep you alive, right? So when you are trying to die, when you are falling sick, when you're aging, whenever anything happens, you are. It's not that he's fighting for your soul in the very, you know, sort of demonic possession kind of way, but literally, you cannot flip that switch.
That's it.
You want to die, also cannot die. So, you know, it's not some spiritual battle. It's just the program is still running, right? And then after you die, the program still runs.
You just cannot, you know, turn off your computer. No matter how much you click shut down, it just won't shut down.
Which means this is perfect opportunity to come back as a zombie. But okay, that's not in our culture. All right? But yeah, so you don't become something, you don't you know, come back as a zombie, you're not reanimated, but there's something that will not die, right? Which to me then creates a different type of haunting. You know, I don't think, you know, whatever we believe ghosts to be, that's not what you are. That's what other people without barang get to become, right? If the best deal is to move on, right, whatever your belief in moving on is, great. The not so good deal is stuck as a ghost, unfinished business, etc. But the barang does not allow you to do that either. You are not just a ghost because you aren't really dead.
Yeah, you are.
You know,
really dead.
That's scarier, but we don't know what that means.
You are alive without a body. That's what it is.
Yeah, how is that different from anything else? We need more. I think we need to understand the distinct differences then, you know, because we are now talking about a separate realm of entities,
okay,
who are not ghosts.
Okay, so I still think, obviously this isn't science, it's all hypotheses right now. So when you die, when we die, we have the option to go towards the light. Some people, unfinished business, we refuse the light, we refuse the transcendence, we stick around. So then we become the ghost. But for most ghosts, if you are not bound by a barang, people can still pray over you. You can eventually still decide to move on if you want to, or if you have done the wrong things right, you know, you have found justice, you can still go towards the white light. The white light is still there for the taking. But I think these people who have no shutdown button, they go into that realm, they know physical form, they have no exit, they are just in limbo, stuck there with their personality. They are
stuck where?
There. In a limbo. In a limbo. It's like between worlds.
In the same place as everything else? Because same. I'm wondering about. Because
same place
then
as ghost.
Then you're then in that case, having the barang. Okay, like, it's still a bad deal, but you know, it's not as horrendous a deal because there's no great suffering. It's the same suffering as any other soul who refuses to move on.
But you know, except child, you don't have the
child
option.
Child spirits refuse to move on. You know, there are many, right? Suicides refuse to move on. You know, yeah, murder victims refuse to move on. Same. So join the gang.
Same you know? Space, yeah.
I wonder if there's a different space. That's my point, because it's such a different origin. You know, and for it to empty into the same dumping ground is less exciting, right? And anyway, there's no way to know because, you know, we hardly know what the worlds are, let alone what is between the worlds and how many categories there are.
If we look at souls and spirits and entities at different frequencies, they could be in the same parallel planes but different frequencies. So this guy that died with the barang, he could be functioning at a frequency. So he could be in the prison walking around, but he's not seeing the other kinds of ghosts because he's vibrating at a different frequency from them. So if you look at it from an overarching overhead point, there are many threads of realities, many threads of planes, so to speak. This guy could just be literally in limbo by himself. Then your ghosts and everything, they are at that vibration of angry dead, you know, who doesn't want to move on. They are in another plane. Then your demons, your entity, which is all in that same parallel universes. I think that, I like to think that's what it is, lah.
So it's just layers, lah. Just layers. Quite interesting. Tell us what you think, guys. By the way, just now it was Pusaka, not Puaka.
Correct. Saka. Yeah.
Pusaka, yeah.
Anything, any great things in the comment? I see the thing was from the corner of my eye, I see the things keep moving up. So let's read up some stuff.
There's an argument about gin and they're talking about gin and tonic. And Bedok Reservoir. Okay. They're talking about your Paka here in Pulau Ubin. See, reading.
Isolation at Bedok Reservoir. Just actually, since the recent unfortunate incident that happened a few days ago, people have been texting me to investigate the area. I don't know. I know when a death just happens, you investigate, could be too insensitive and too soon, guys. What do you think?
I think we cannot convert human tragedy to a ghost story too easily. You give it time. After all, you go so soon, the soul is still trying to do its own thing, right? You know, don't kacau. Sekali you go there, you contact the spirit, talk to the spirit miss the white light and then end up hanging around because you distracted him, then you die. So let nature run its course. There may not be a ghost after all. It may just process normally, you know? Yeah.
Jacqueline, thank you very much for your blessings. See you at the Live Show. Right. See you at the Live Show. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're just watching us right now, you're wondering what this Live Show is about. 6th January, Jonathan and myself, we are performing in front of a, we have a room for 100 packs. We do hope we can feel 100 of you there, and it'd be quite sad for 100 chairs, but only 30 of you showed up. So,
then it'll be full of our other friends.
So, if you want to join us, 6th January, it's a Saturday, click the link above on the group chat, or if you're listening to us and you're not looking at the chat section, go to tinyurl.com/sclls2024. That's Supernatural Confessions live show 2024. Okay. When in doubt, always go to website www.supernaturalconfessions.com, or you want to get straight to the helpline. Operators are standing by. My number is +65 9459 4931.
Oh, I see a very interesting theory. Right. So yes. MDRZNBM. I do not know how to pronounce your short form. Okay, but he says, what if the gangster is actually the barang itself seeking a new owner since the old one is expired? Ah. So what they're seeing in their death row cell is actually the barang itself saying, take me.
Might be.
You know? Yes, entirely possible, might be. You know,
Oh, I didn't think of it that way, but I like that one, yeah.
Yeah, that's quite interesting. Let me see what else.
Oh, the other thing in the confession they talked about, and I double check on this as well, some of the police officers were willing to take on the barang from the inmates.
Mm.
Now, remember that this was a time where barang was very valuable. People were paying good money for authentic barangs.
Yeah.
And when you find this inmate with authentic barang, policemen or not, in the 70s, that very different mindset from what we have now, wouldn't mind taking on the barang for themselves. Those were the times where superstitions or occult practices were very, very rampant. So if you're sitting there thinking, well, don't be crazy, you take on the barang for what? Back then, it was almost like someone give you, hey, I'm going to die, you want to take my Rolex?
I don't think it's just last time. I think right now, if you really can prove that you have effective barang, there'll be no shortage of people willing to take it on. Mm. You know, because if you want to invest in crypto, you better have barang. You know, there are other dangers in the current world.
I like this line. Barang was the crypto back in the day.
Yeah, totally, man. Yeah. Just go to Carousell and see how much barang is being sold for ridiculous prices. Mm. And, you know, clearly some are very scammy, you know, but some are so expensive, you wonder if they could be real, right? So there is definitely a market for it, right? So if death row is a clearinghouse for barang, wow, I tell you, it'd be like shopping at the used secondhand bookstore like that. Right, you know. So, prison officers, you are the first, you get first pick.
Yeah.
Right. Interesting. The dark exchanges that are happening in the prison.
Yeah. If any of you listening in, you want to get in touch with me, you're working in the prison, you want to be anonymous, my number is +65 9459 4931. We would love to hear more of what you have to tell us that is current. Right. How has it been since then and now? What's the difference? We would love to hear from you.
How many have you collected? Yeah, you know. Minrisa is saying, it's interesting how you guys dissect the phenomenon. I feel like I'm attending a class about the science of the supernatural. Oh no, this is the MSA Academy, okay? MSA night class every Friday. Wow, okay.
Inna Sharon, thank you. 444. Forming stability. May wishes for your endeavors. Thank you, Inna Sharon.
Why does 4 mean stability? Which culture does 4 mean stability in? Because 4 means something very different.
4 means pantang to Chinese.
For the Chinese, yeah. You know, but I guess that's also stability, lah. You know? So for the Chinese, if you're not aware, 4 reminds them of death because of the way. Thanks for saying the word, because of how it sounds. But maybe that's stability, that's the ultimate stability, right? You know? Wow. Won't be surprised if the officers who take the barang is to allow the prisoners to pass on, since the barang taken can always be discarded. Wow, I like this theory, man. MDRZN. So this is now the possibility that there are officers who are actually who are volunteering to take the thing.
Correct.
So that the prisoner can die a proper death, and after that they go out and deal with it elsewhere.
Correct.
I mean
Yeah. So the idea was on one hand, yes, maybe for selfish reasons, but the other hand is also to help the prisoners get a proper death.
Well, then this gangster unlucky now, because just that day he was off on MC. You know? Can you imagine? Okay, so this is a TV series I want to see, right? I want to see about this person whose job it is to just take on every barang. You know, and somehow he has the capacity to like tahan. Right? He's got like, you know, 40 years of barang all on him.
The death row, you know? Barang collector.
Yeah, you know, it's like how in medieval villages in Europe last time they had this person called the sin eater, you know, who helps you cleanse your sins by consuming your sins and taking them on themselves. You know, so what a wonderful idea, right? You know, so I'm the barang eater, you know, wow, interesting. And what would happen to that person when they die? Wow. Interesting.
Okay, we're going to... Oh, okay. Anything else to read out?
Minrisa is saying, maybe if you flip the number 4 horizontally, it looks like a triangle. Yeah. And triangles are said to be a stable shape.
Pyramid.
I don't know if it's geometry. I don't know if it's considered that because of geometry. But okay, let's see.
There's a Kokila Rani. Hi guys. Hi. Love your channel and all the episodes. Finally my first live.
Wow. Okay. Just in time to catch the end of the season. We have only one more episode to go, but don't worry, we are only away for a short while. We'll be back at the beginning of the year.
Yeah.
And if you miss us that much, please come to the live show, see us in person, contribute, join us in the chat. You know, it's gonna be wild. It's gonna be wild.
Okay, before we say goodbye, let's do a little bit of Koyok selling. We have Walk with Hantu. John and I are still running it. We have one more. We have one this Saturday. And then
tomorrow.
It's tomorrow. Next week, we have a special filming, so no walk. The week after, I'm attending the wedding ceremony of Murali's son, so I won't be able to attend. Yeah, and then the following week, we could. I think that's what, 16?
16. Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. So let us. December. Yeah. So please contact Eugene if you are keen to come in a pre Christmas Hantu walk. Oh, we should only do like a Christmas Eve walk, right? Like, with reindeer ears. What day is Christmas Eve? Let's see.
24th. Hey, we are 1 month away exactly, no? From Christmas 24th.
Oh, no. Eh?
Okay, December.
No,
24th is 23rd is Saturday, 24th Christmas Eve is Sunday.
No. Oh yes, okay, yes, correct. I'm looking at November. Why am I doing that? Okay. Yeah. Yes. Wow. Okay. So maybe if people are interested, we can do a Christmas Eve walk. And then we can go caroling after that.
We go in front of Old Changi Hospital and carol.
Wow. Eugene caroling, exercise the place, man.
You gotta follow my key, yeah.
Everyone squeezing to go back through the portal. Back to the underworld.
Speaking of portals and the underworld, the haunting of Block 5, Changi Village. This is the place where you would go there to makan supper sometimes. And first-hand account of someone who had lived there. And this one involves her husband. This is Ilyx, who is a skeptic. And I met him during the confession. And he was like, yeah, now I'm a believer.
Wow. All
right. Okay. Anything else from you, John?
Something interesting shared by Nana T. People with barang, when they lay on the coffin, their whole body will turn purple black because the barang are eating their flesh internally. That sounds like the kind of belief that suits the whole barang myth, right? That you know, there must be some sort of special thing that happens to you or your body or your spirit or all of the above, you know, because the barang, it cannot be such a normal situation, right? You know, so please let us know if you have barang related stories, you know, or pusaka related stories. I think there's bound to be a part 2 to this, you know. So yes, send your confessions into Eugene and we can Okay. Next season, we do a part two.
Yeah. So we have one more new name that just came in. Joseph Ng. At last, catch you guys live.
At this time. Okay. Hopefully, you were with us earlier. Okay.
And Reverie. Secret Santa Barang Exchange.
Oh, Barang Exchange. Oh, I curse you, you curse me. Nice.
Yeah. Okay, now, not level 42. We have the feature confession up in 3 minutes' time.
Yeah.
Before we say goodbye, one last time for an ad. You know, I just click the button and then there's an ad that plays on YouTube. Which is more fun than YouTube trying to just insert ad any old how that they like.
Fair enough.
Okay.
Thanks for joining us today. Quite interesting. Wow. It went to bizarre places, which is very exciting.
Come, any last words to say goodbye to?
Personally, I feel I would be very tempted to take on a barang because it's kind of the old-fashioned way, right? To live your best life, right?
Can be arranged, John. Can be arranged.
Yeah, live your best life. You know, we take supplements, we go gym, we do all these things to make our lives better, right? So isn't the barang the ultimate sort of self-enhancement, right? So...
Looks like John's corrupted. This is corrupted.
but I want barang with insurance. So I'll take my barang if it comes from like Manulife or AIA or something. You know? So that's where MSA comes in. I think our job is to vet all the barang and then we will like accredited by MSA. Okay, these barangs are safe.
And insured.
Yeah, so barang registration number, blah, 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 blah. So yeah, hopefully that will happen. But I think at the very end, when it's time to sign on the dotted line, I think I'll chicken out. Because you have no idea, right? You cannot believe any of these things. Not because everything's lying to you, but because you cannot understand the context they're talking about. Even if they say blah, 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 other terms, you don't know what that means.
Yeah.
You don't know what that means from our side, you know, the wrong end of the telescope. We cannot trust what is being offered to us, you know. So be careful, people.
So Vidya says, John, don't lah. Rizwan Muhammad Rizwan says, John has been compromised.
Oh.
Okay, I'll leave you with this parting message, which I got while I was doing my meditation and I had a out-of-body experience and I came back with this knowledge. I just want to share with you this line that for you to think about. Time is just an echo of things that has happened and we are consciousness. Prince of Paranormal Eugene Tay and the immortal Jonathan Lim saying goodnight and we'll see you guys next Friday for the season finale of 2023.
Yeah, bring your barang.
Goodnight, everybody.
Good night.
What did you find? You're listening to Supernatural Confessions.